The Planning Commission meeting will come to order, and our voting members this morning will be Mr. Curry, Mr. Joya, Mr. Risley, Mr. Smith, Mr. Wood, and Ms. Therese. So that gives us, and myself, which makes seven. So that's good. Do we have opening statements from Mr. Dossie? Or does Mr. Dossie have a representative, or? Or did I start the meeting too early?
No, I apologize. Carrie Parsons, Planning and Community Development. I think Craig Dossie has been held up in a meeting. So in terms of the report items, we do not have the regional building data for you today, but I am happy to go over the Board of County Commissioners Action Report from last week. The only thing to report to you is that the Sterling Ranch filing number one final plat is still continued to a date no date certain, which is unusual. Okay. And the applicant is still working on obtaining those off-site easements or redesigning their construction drawings at this point.
And just in time.
Just in time.
Well, good morning, Mr. Dossie.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Planning Commission. Sorry, I'm just now walking in. wanted to circle back around with you on one of the items I brought up at the last hearing, which was getting a Planning Commission member appointed by you all to the Steering Committee for the Water Master Plan. I think Mr. Creeley offered up his services after some discussions, and I just wanted to see what you all thought about that. We are very close to kind of finalizing the list. It's turned out to be longer than we thought, which I guess I'm not surprised by that. But I guess I would defer to you all as to whether or not Mr. Creeley would be your nomination.
I have a few comments since I got the email from Mr. Creeley, and he phrased it that if no one else would do it, he would do it. So what I'd like to do is to spend a couple of minutes trying to sell the position, hopefully to someone who is going to be on the Planning Commission a little longer than I will be, or perhaps Mr. Creeley will be.
And just as a reminder, our timeline for this is to try to get it drafted and ultimately adopted by the Planning Commission by the end of 2018.
Okay, that'd be great. The I've lived in El Paso County now for 39 years, and the one thing I've noticed is that El Paso County gets water out of the ground, and the city of Colorado Springs largely gets snowmelt. And the number one driver for growth and prosperity in the region is going to be water. And the what we're working on here is what's our water situation today in the 2040 time frame, in the 2060 plus time frame. So really, I think this is incredibly important, because what we do with water is really going to determine our future for the next 50 to 100 years.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
May.
Yes.
So the meeting time for this is, we're looking at first Tuesday of the month, correct?
As of right now, yes. And that was really to accommodate the consultant who's already down in this area of the world on that day. I realize that there's a potential that conflicts with your all's hearing. I think we set it up for 1 o'clock or something like that in the afternoon. So, you know, in large part, I think we're done in these hearings before then, but there's a chance that it could overlap.
Right. Is there any chance that that could change? Because that, honestly, that's the only thing that's holding up my availability to be involved, because I also have a board meeting in the afternoons on Tuesday, first Tuesday of the month. So,
yeah, I think it could change. You know, as I said, we're just now finalizing the list. You know, if there's enough scheduling conflicts with those that are on the list, you know, what we'll probably do, have to do with that is send out a doodle poll to figure out what routinely is the best time for everybody. And I don't think necessarily it's going to be monthly. Certainly not initially. It won't be monthly because there won't be nothing to talk about for a little while. But, you know, I would say that there's an opportunity that it could change. Right now, we're meeting with the consultant on a weekly basis around that same time, just because that's when it works for them. But I would imagine that it will probably change.
And from the past your past experience with this type of committee working on other master plans and such, how long do you anticipate the average meeting being? On average,
yeah, I know it's hard to say. I mean, it depends on the subject matter that you're talking about at respective meetings, because you know there's maybe some more formative type things that we get kind of an initial take on, but then there's going to be some where we're reviewing actual text, and that obviously is going to take more time. I would hope that at the most those meetings would be an hour and a half. Okay. I think if you go beyond that, you start losing people, both maybe physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's not the purpose of the steering committee. Steering committee is really it's kind of like sitting in on the planning commission. You'll get things ahead of the meeting, review them, and then if you have any comments or any questions, that's what we should be talking about those meetings. Not everybody sitting down and reading and then asking the questions.
Right,
so
right.
There's going to be some lifting outside of the committee that needs to be done in preparation for those meetings. But I would hope that we would be able to keep those meetings. I would shoot for an hour, but an hour and a half may be appropriate at certain times.
Okay. With that in mind, Mr. Chair, there's the potential that I might actually still be available for that.
Okay. Ms. Therese?
I am also
interested. Do you have your button up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's up. Sorry.
There you
Thank
go.
You. You sound much better now.
I am currently a member of the Colorado Center Metropolitan District Board, and we provide water and wastewater services to 1,100 homes. So it's a subject very near and dear to my heart, and would be very interested in helping.
Okay. Is there anyone else? It seems like we're overweighted on the audience's right side.
My comments were the same as Mr. Joy's, insofar as it was the timing that prevented me from volunteering, because CTAB meets after this, so it's
sure.
The same thing. But I wanted to ask, because there is discussion about having Ms. Rainey do it due to her personal interest in the water issue. Did we hear back from her?
Yes, we have.
Okay.
And she said, based upon the other things she has on her schedule, and she would prefer not to serve.
Perfect. In that case, I would support either of the two other volunteers.
Okay.
or Mr. Creeley as well.
And Chair, I would echo the comments that you made. I think this plan is extremely important for the future of not only El Paso County, but for the region. As I think I've stated before, this is going to be something that we work with all of the water providers in the unincorporated areas of the county. But also, we're planning on involving CSU as having a member of the steering committee that represents CSU. So it's bigger than the city. It's bigger than any one region. It's bigger than any one district. I think it's very important, frankly, and I think I've talked to you all about the idea of updating our land use master plan, particularly the small area plans. I felt very strongly that the water component of that needed to go before the land use part. I don't know how you plan for land use into the future if you don't know what your water situation is.
Mm-hmm.
So quite frankly, this sets the stage for what will be a later effort, which is updating our land use master plan. So I think it's a very important process. I can tell you that the people that we've identified, and most of which have already agreed to serve on the steering committee, frankly, is a very impressive list of people who know what they're doing. You know, but at the same time, we're going to ask for some people that represent ag interests, that represent, I'll say, general citizens, constituents, metro districts, as I said, CSU, school districts. So we're getting a good flavor for all those entities that have an interest, not only in water, but in the growth of in terms of development in the county and maybe even in the city. This is not a small thing. And to do it in a year and a half is a very aggressive timeline, which means that I'm going to be asking a lot probably of the steering committee members in terms of being prepared for the meeting so that we can keep things moving forward. But we are so far behind the times when it comes to planning for water and growth and ultimately land use that I wanted to get this done in fairly short order so that we can then launch into the land use part of it. So there will be a lot asked of the steering committee, but I think anybody who's willing to do it is going to get probably the education of a lifetime when it comes to water, particularly in this area.
Okay. Is there any other interests here? Hearing none, then I believe we really have three nominees, Mr. Creeley, Mr. Joya, and Ms. Therese. And so with those three names, I will call the roll, and we'll figure out what the sense of the commission is. Mr. Curry.
I can actually support any of the candidates. I think if Mr. Creeley just wanted to do it by default, wasn't a strong interest, then I would probably support the two here. Because I'm sure either one would do a fine job, and I have no preference. I would be very happy with either.
I'm going to require that you do have a preference. One of the ground rules for the Planning Commission is one cannot abstain.
Chair, if I could recommend something,
yes.
Given the schedule, potentially scheduling issues, I'd recommend is maybe a primary and then maybe an alternate in the event the scheduling doesn't work out for that individual. Maybe you'd have an alternate that it would work out for.
I can say that I have no scheduling issues with if it is on a Tuesday afternoon.
You do? Well, or?
She says she
do not.
You do not. Okay.
Well, in that case, I will support her as a primary and Mr. Joya as an alternate, given that there are potential at least scheduling.
Okay. Get back to my list. Mr. Joya.
Well, I'll support myself and Ms. Latrice as an alternate.
Okay.
Vote early, vote often.
Mr. Risley.
I think I'll side with Mr. Curry on this and propose Ms. Treese as the primary with Mr. Joy as the alternate.
That's an interest in me being.
Mr. Smith.
Ms. Treese, based on everything that's been discussed.
And Mr. Wood.
Ms. Treese.
Okay. And the chair votes for Ms. Therese. So our primary will be Ms. Therese, and secondary will be Mr. Joya.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
And
appreciate
I don't know, I'm a little bit hesitant to switch over to the camera after what we experienced last hearing. What I'll do, you should all have the backup materials for not only your agenda, but also the board action sheet. There's not much to talk about there. The only thing on there was the final plat for Sterling Ranch, filing number one. That has, we got a new camera. Look at that. So the only thing for the board since our last hearing was the Sterling Ranch filing number one. Again, there's still negotiations ongoing for that offsite easement. As far as I'm aware, no progress has been made, but they are in the works there. And then today you have two consent items. You have the agenda item 2B, which is file number VR 17005. It's a vacation replat for the Padmark Business Park, filing number one. There were 11 adjoining property owners notified. One replied in favor. Second agenda item that is on consent calendar is item 2C. That is file number SF15028. It's a final plat for the Forest Lakes filing number 2B. There were 7 adjoining property owners notified, and 1 responded in favor. I think that's it for me. You also have your minutes on the consent calendar. Do you have any questions for me? One other item I want to update you on. I think I touched on it a little bit at the last Planning Commission meeting. I propose an effort to try to electronically codify our land development code online. I have met with almost every other department and tried to encourage them to come along with us. I think we're at the point now where there's consensus that the best thing for the county is to codify all of our regulations electronically in one location, so that you can search for all of the ordinances, you can search the drainage criteria manual, the engineering criteria manual, our land development code, all in the same location. I was hoping I'd get a different volunteer to run that. I did not get that, so our department volunteered to kind of run that effort on behalf of the entire county. Again, Tracy got voluntold that she's going to help do that. But I think it's a very exciting thing. You know, a lot of the commissioners ran on the basis of transparency. I think we've certainly accomplished that with our EDARP system, but I think this also provides additional transparency and ease of access for the public. I will also say there's some major improvements on the way, both from the assessor's office as well as from the county as a whole, in terms of functionality of our website, service requests that are done electronically for our Public Works Department, as well as our Parks Department. They'll be rolling those out here in the next few months. But I'm very excited about the improvements that the county's making from a technology standpoint and from a service standpoint. Look for those to come, because I think you're going to be very impressed at what the other departments are doing. I'm very pleased with what we've done, but to see it happening throughout the county, it feels like all the departments are pulling in the same direction. So it's a really exciting time to be in the position I'm in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And congratulations, Tracy. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Any changes? Hearing none, the minutes will be approved as presented. And with that, let's proceed with the first, consent items. We have 2 items on the consent calendar. Is there anybody on the commission who would like to pull either of these 2 off? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to have these 2 items taken off? Hearing none, we'll proceed with the motion on the first item.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Ready.
Mr. Joya.
Would you like separate motions for each of the items?
Yes, have a separate motion for each item. Thank you.
In regards, item 2B, file number VR17-005, Padmark Business Park filing number 1, vacation and replat. I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page number 19, with 6 conditions and 4 notations, and the finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Second.
All right, second from Ms. Therese. Any comments? Then we'll have a vote. Mr. Joya?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley? Oh, Mr. Creeley isn't here. Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Mr. Maston? Is not here. Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the item 2B, VR17005, vacation and replat, is approved, recommended approval with 6 notations and 4 notations, 6 conditions and 4 notations, and a finding of sufficiency.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Next one.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Joya.
In regards, item number 2C, SF-15-028, Forest Lakes filing 2B final plat. I move for approval
onto the new standard resolution, page 19, with 11 conditions and 3 notations, and a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Second.
And Ms. Therese provided the second. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, we'll proceed with the vote. Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So item 2C, file number SF15028, final plat, Forest Lakes, filing 2B with 11 conditions and 3 notations, is recommended approval on page 19 with finding of sufficiency in terms of water from the Forest Lake Metropolitan District, quality and quantity and dependability. And so that is passed. We'll move to the next item on the agenda, which is item 3. And who wants to open that up? Mr. Ramirez.
Good morning, Planning Commission. Mr. Chair, Ramir Fitzpatrick with Planning and Community Development. I see some new faces since the last time I've visited with the Planning Commission. I'd like to say welcome and look forward to working with all of you. This is an application for a variance of use approval for the Flettes Contractors Equipment Yard. Myself and Tommy Hoff with the Engineering Division reviewed and prepared the comments. Tommy Hoff is not available today, so he will be filled in by Elizabeth Nykamp. At this time, I would like to introduce the owners of the business and the property and the applicants, Mr. and Mrs. Cesar and Elia Flettes.
Have you had an opportunity to sign in?
No.
If you would please sign in and state your name in the microphone for the record. Could you state your name for the record?
Cesar Flettes.
Thank you.
My name is Elia Flettes.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. So, we own a business. So it's a stucco and a stone. Does what we do. So we have been in business for about 10 years. And we have been working on a permit to have our equipment on a 12460 Falcon Highway. So we like to keep our equipment and materials on our property. So we built a garage. It's 85 by 54 to keep materials inside the building. And the only thing we have outside, it is a scaffold, trailers, and a few mixers. And I was working with Ramir, and I was telling him, if we need to build another garage to keep the most our stuff inside or enclosed, so we can do it. So we just need your approval.
Okay. The hearing that we're having here today, we will come up with a recommendation for the Board of County Commissioners, and the Board of County Commissioners will actually make the final decision. But basically, our job is to sort things out and come up with a recommendation for the Board of County Commissioners. So if, regardless of whether you get a yes or no here, you'll get another opportunity to meet with the Board of County Commissioners.
We would like to show you some.
Sure.
Okay. This is the garage, and this is for Chief Road View. This is the equipment that we have outside the garage. This is the scaffold, trailer, truck, the stone boxes. The property has 35 acres, and we fence this part here. We would like to continue. It's just a portion. We would like to complete it so everything is enclosed. This is from Falcon Highway view. This is the house, and this is the detached garage. Falcon Highway. This is in the property. This was taken from Chief Road. This white fence, this is where the property starts, towards the garage. This is inside the garage. We keep some foam, wire, cement bags. This is the foam inside the garage. This is the scaffold that we keep outside. This is from a real road. The view from Falcon Highway. And as my husband says, we try to keep everything neat, clean, and inside organized. Inside the garage. Outside. What are the views of the property?
Those are the views from the property from the all from Falcon Highway, Chief Road, Del Rio, and we took pictures from close and a little bit farther to see how the property looks, so how the neighbors. And see the.
Okay.
What we have.
Do you have any other comments besides this that you want to present at this point in time? You'll have an opportunity to come back and talk to.
We do not work in there. We just keep our materials in there because our business it is doing a stock loan houses. So. We don't work in there. My two brothers and I, we are the only one who go to the yard or the shop. So I send employees directly to the job site. So they are always go to their houses, to the job site. So the only ones who go to the shop, it's me and my two brothers. So we don't work in there. So I just go probably, I'll say 10 times a day to pick up some materials and then take to my guys to work. So we built this garage because we used to send the materials from our suppliers to the job site, but the people stolen materials, even vehicles from job site. So that's why we bought this property and built the garage to stock our materials in there. So
okay.
That's why we are trying to have a permit. So one of our guys who work for us lives on a house in there. So we just live 4 minutes away from the property. So that's pretty much it.
All right. Are there any questions from the commissioners?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mr. Curry.
Yes, thank you. Some of the surrounding neighbors have sent some concerns back, some relative to noise. And I'm very sensitive to trucks backing up. They have those beepers. You can hear them like forever. How early in the morning or how late in the afternoon do you operate the trucks as you bring them in and out of the equipment yard?
The trucks has no beeps. So, and we start in the morning about 6, and late it's probably 4:30. So.
But as early as 6 in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Risley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you built the garage that you store these materials in. When was this garage constructed?
It was, we start probably a year and a half ago, but we finished like 8 months after we start.
And did you obtain a building permit when that was constructed?
Yes, we have a permit. We have everything for the garage.
I'd be curious to hear from staff at some point about how that permit was pulled and what the land use review process was that occurred in order for that to happen. I share some equal, I guess, concern that Mr. Curry expressed with regard to noise. A number of the responses from surrounding property owners were concerned with noise, and it would seem to me even if the trucks don't have the warning beeps when they back up, I saw what looked like an image of maybe a small tractor or a bobcat or something. Those are fairly noisy vehicles, aren't they?
Probably. We have a forklift. It's the only, it has a beeps, but we have a inside the garage most of the time, and so we load the materials close to the garage. It's far away from the neighbors. But
do your suppliers deliver materials to this location?
Yes.
How many deliveries a day or a week would you estimate?
No, it's once a month. So we bought the materials like for 1 month, and we always have pretty much for the complete month. So it is once a month when they deliver materials.
So once a month, you've got a pretty large vehicle, I imagine, that's bringing a month's worth of supplies to this location.
Yeah, well, once they.
So like a semi-trailer or something?
Mm-hmm, semi-trailer, yeah. Yeah, with, I'll say 14 pallets of materials,
yeah.
And that's what we are stuck in inside the garage.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
I do have one more. Does your residential property allow size? Is it big enough to house something like this? Where you live, your home? Is your property large enough to house a building like this?
No.
Well, the property is 35 acres. So there is the house is in the front, the garage we built is behind the house.
I mean, you're where you live.
Well, where we live?
Yeah, you don't live on this property. You live elsewhere.
No, we live...
We live from there.
Yes, what does your residential property... How many acres is
it? No, we own just half an acre.
I see.
So there's no way to stock our materials in there.
Yes, understood. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Ramir, did you have a presentation?
And before we get started, I just want to direct your attention to the review and approval criteria. I don't know the county attorney's office if their custom has been to go over the review and approval criteria. I haven't visited with you all in quite some time. Cole or Kenny?
Kenny is going to make his maiden voyage.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kenneth Hodges, Senior Assistant County Attorney. Just a short brief on the nature of this item. This is a zoning matter. A variance request is a zoning matter. The practical effect of that is that the Planning Commission actually has broader discretion as far as what is and is not considered and how those factors are weighed in determining whether or not to grant the variance. Variance is generally defined as allowing the property owner to establish or maintain a use which is otherwise prohibited in the zone based on a showing of exceptional difficulty or undue hardship. There are a list of factors from the Land Development Code that the Planning Commission may consider, not necessarily shall consider. That was actually changed in 2016. That list is as follows. Strict Land Development Code application may result in exceptional practical difficulty or undue hardship, again, tying back to the nature of variance. Also consider the compatibility and harmony with surrounding area and neighborhood, whether or not the variance would be detrimental to health, safety, and welfare. Whether the use meets air, water, odor, or noise standards, whether the use complies with all other land development code, county, state, federal requirements, whether or not the use adversely affects wildlife or wetlands, whether or not offsite impacts are addressed, whether or not adequate parking, traffic circulation, open space, fencing, screening, or landscaping has been established, and whether sewer, water, drainage, fire and police protection, roads available are adequate to meet the needs of the use. Can I answer any questions at this point?
I'm not seeing any.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I guess it's my turn again. So to begin with, I just want to identify some of the issues and the concerns that were raised by the residents and neighbors. There were issues of noise, traffic, concerns regarding expansion and additional construction on the site, and the appearance of the property. Staff's concerns were primarily related to the negative visual impacts, and as we discussed in the staff report and we'll discuss further in this presentation, that we believe that requirement to contain equipment and building materials indoors will rectify and eliminate any potential visual impacts, and then we can look at additional noise or traffic impacts. I do want to qualify our recommendation that everything be stored indoors. There was an exception for vehicles and trailers, because those can be parked in designated areas, and additional screening can be provided for those. Adjoining property owners were notified. We received 6 responses, 1 in favor and 5 in opposition. 2 of the responses in opposition are a husband and wife who own 2 adjacent properties, and so the husband responded as a property owner for one, and the wife responded as a property owner for the other. There was another response that we received that was over 2 miles away. We included it in the supplemental materials, but I did not include that on this map. Again, there was 1 in favor, this property owner here. He thought that the Flettes have done an excellent job in organizing and maintaining the site with respect to the cleanliness and the appearance of the building. The property owner at 6820 Rio Lane had concerns about noise. The property owner at 6750 Rio Lane had concerns also about noise, but noted that this was not a commercial zone, it was a residential zone, and recommended that the applicants find an appropriate zoning district. The property owners at 6610 and 6540 were the husband and wife property owners. The owner, the representative of 6610, basically expressed a desire to not allow any further expansion of the use. The property owner representing 6540 actually said that the site looks good, but again had concerns about expansion and setting of precedents. A contractor's equipment yard is described as a service establishment primarily engaged in general contracting or subcontracting in the construction trades or landscape trades, and it may include offices, workshops, indoor or outdoor storage of tools, equipment, materials, and vehicles used in connection with the business. And this is going to answer, I believe, Mr. Risley's question. Planning and Community Development Department did approve a site plan for the 4,300 square foot detached garage, PCD file number ADD 15177, and that was approved as an accessory residential structure. It met the accessory residential structure size allowances, and so at that point they were pulling a building permit, and so there wasn't any concern necessarily about what may occur within it, because it's standard for people to build detached garages and accessory structures on the property, on their properties. So nothing to create alarm, just with the simple site plan being approved.
Mr. Chair, could I just interject?
With yes, Mr. Risley.
Kind of follow-on question to
sure.
that. So obviously it was approached, the county and regional building was approached at that time that this is a residential property. We want to build an accessory structure in conformance with residential, not only zoning codes, but planning and building construction codes. If this were a commercial property, would that structure have been allowed to be constructed in the manner that it was constructed in?
Yes, and it possibly could have been constructed to greater dimensions with larger square footage than what was permitted in, as a residential accessory structure.
Thank you.
A complaint was received by the department on April 14, 2016 that a business was operating on the property. Specifically, the complainant complained that a semi-trailer making a delivery had temporarily blocked their driveway. Since then, a notice of violation was sent out April 27th, and it was confirmed that a business was in operation on the property that had not obtained the proper permits and approvals. Since the initial notice of violation, staff has not received any additional complaints regarding the property. So even though the adjoining property owners did express some concerns regarding some of the noise impacts, there have not been any additional complaints since the Flettes have been in the process. So the Flettes submitted an early assistance application in August of 2016 following the notice of violation. At that time, it was unclear that they did not reside on the property, and they were sent down the path to receive a special use permit for a rural home occupation. They submitted that in January of 2017. Through the review process, it was discovered that they were not indeed residing on the property, but that they had a primary residence elsewhere and an employee lived on the site. And upon additional staff research and analysis of the Land Development Code, it was determined that they were not eligible to receive a permit as a rural home occupation because the owner operator of the business should reside on the site. The applicants did submit an application for variance of use in May of 2017. Again, I do want to point out that they have been working with staff, making progress along the way to get through two different land use application processes, which have concluded in our consideration of a variance today. This is the zoning of the area. It's primarily zoned RR5. The Flittis property is highlighted here. This is zeroing down on the area. And specifically the site. This is a 2016 aerial photograph, which was probably shot sometime in early 2015, mid 2015. This is current Google imagery that was shot in 2017. You see the sort of the paved pad that the applicants have installed to store or for use in the operation of the business. At this time, I'd like to invite Elizabeth Nykamp to briefly go over some of the engineering review related to this project.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Elizabeth Nykamp, engineering department of the, engineering team of the Planning and Community Development. On the transportation aspect, they have access to Falcon Highway. We did not require a traffic impact study because their application suggested that there would be about 10 vehicles coming into the site a day, which would be 20 trips, and so that doesn't trigger our need for a study at this time. And then because they're not estimated to exceed 100 trips, then they're not subject to the road impact fee either. This site is 35 acres in size. It was studied in approximately 2013. It's in the Falcon drainage basin. And so with the huge size of the lot and the limited amount of development that's on the lot currently, we don't feel a need for any drainage impact study at this point or drainage study at this point. If they do want to expand, we would want a drainage analysis. The floodplain does nick the corner of this site on the northwest corner. The development is far enough away that it's not impacting that as well. And that's all I have, I believe. Oh, okay. I think I've gone through all of that. So if there's any questions for me.
Any questions? I have a question.
Absolutely, Mr. Egbert.
Access to this is from Falcon Highway, and the Falcon Highway is a collector. How is access on and off of Falcon Highway designed or intended or what?
I think we had some slides here that showed, here we go. So Falcon Highway is that east-west running highway mm-hmm. to the south of the property. And they have, you know, they don't have to back out onto Falcon Highway. And we don't feel that there's any impact to that. I mean, it's already a single-family residential home, which we anticipate 9 trips, you know. Okay. So if a single-family home can do it, a pickup truck pulling a trailer certainly could do it. The tractor-trailer truck might have, you know, to wait a little bit, but it shouldn't impact the movement on the highway at all.
And what is the speed limit, you know, on Falcon Highway, roughly?
I'm afraid I do not know at all whatsoever.
All right.
I have no clue.
Okay. Neither do I.
I have none. It's probably been a few weeks since I've even been on the Falcon Highway.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Absolutely.
So in reviewing the application, we considered some guidance from the policy plan. One is to fully consider the potential impact of proposed zoning changes, including variances and development on the integrity of existing neighborhoods, and to ensure that proposed zone changes and or use variances in established neighborhoods are compatible or of compatible scale and physical character. And just going back to the staff report and the applicant's letter of intent, staff's primary concern with the use of this property, the continued use of this property for a contractor's equipment yard, was the visual impacts and the potential visual impacts. The applicants have indicated in their letter of intent, as well as depicted on their variance of use site plan, a potential second storage structure for the purpose of storing additional materials indoors. And again, as I stated before, indoor storage eliminates those potential negative impacts. Multiple accessory structures on a 35-acre parcel could be considered compatible with the character of the surrounding area because many of those surrounding properties have been improved with secondary, large secondary accessory structures. Similar in size to that which is located on the Fletis property. And I just went, and the star here is the Fletis property. And the highlighted parcels are those parcels in the area that have been improved with secondary structures or accessory structures that are of a similar size and character as the structure that the Fletis have built. Now, that's not a statement of that's not a statement regarding the activity that's occurring within those properties. There may be agricultural, private, personal, and even some commercial activities located within those, but that's not the subject matter for today's hearing. And so, I just wanted to point out that there are additional properties in the area that have been improved with these large accessory structures. Again, this is the view. Staff went out to visit the site. This is a view from Chief Road, and some of these pictures were probably taken from some of the same vantage points that that the Fletis took pictures from. But this visiting the site and the surrounding area helped inform sort of staff of our position regarding conditions of approval that may address those compatibility issues. Again, these additional views from Chief Road. And again, because of the size of the property, this property is of a greater width than other adjacent properties. And so you have some natural buffers built in. And if we need to look at additional screening, that's definitely something that the Planning Commission can recommend to the Board of County Commissioners. And this is approaching the property from Falcon Highway. This is going up to the storage area. You see the fence that's been installed. This little sort of lean-to structure was an existing agricultural type structure. To my knowledge, it is not in use in association with the business. However, there are some materials that are stored behind, or some supplies that are stored behind this this accessory structure. And this is entering the site. You see the fence, storage of the stone and building materials and vehicles. That's the forklift in question. And visually, staff didn't have a lot of major concerns, just kind of trying to box in some of those remaining items that, that may create a visual nuisance within an enclosed structure. This is inside the garage. Again, the materials. This is looking to the property owner where there were the dual owners, the husband and wife. This is standing adjacent to that northernmost property, looking out from the east. So there are various conditions of approval that staff is recommending. I won't go through them all, but I will summarize them. Basically, staff is recommending that we authorize the construction of a secondary structure for the purpose of storing indoor material or storing materials currently stored on-site outdoors. Should they submit a site development plan for the construction of that, we're recommending that it be completed within 1 year of site development plan approval. Now, we don't want to force them to build an additional structure because they do have the opportunity to move the remaining equipment indoors or store additional things on site. So should they choose not to build, then the option would be then they would store everything within the existing detached garage. Again, the fence would be used to screen the storage of vehicles and trailers, and that fence would need to be 100% opaque and maintained at all times. If, in fact, the fence would be damaged, we would require it to be repaired within 30 days of notification of noncompliance by the department. We are requesting that they submit a site development plan for review that provides a more detailed depiction of how the site is being used within 60 days of approval, and that should they elect to construct the second building, that we would allow the temporary storage of materials during that construction period. Condition of approval that no traffic, parking, or storage occur within the 100-year floodplain, that no storage or activities occur over existing septic components, and that any maintenance or repair vehicles be in compliance with state and federal regulations relating to fluids and different discharges associated with construction. Staff, this morning, I was going through the presentation and realized that we should probably add another condition requiring that all business-related deliveries occur on the site within the designated area adjacent to the garage, and that no vehicular or trailer parking associated with the business be allowed to occur on Falcon Highway. Are there any questions of staff?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Gurry.
Mr. Joy was first.
Oh, Mr. Joy.
I have just two quick questions here, Ramir. First of all, the talk about the fluids needing to be stored and collected properly. Are there fluids that are not being stored and collected properly now?
That was just a blanket recommendation by the health department, because anytime you have equipment, you know, there's an opportunity to do repair.
So there's no known issues.
There's
with that
no
right
known
now.
Identified issue. No.
And then the other thing is, I noticed that the fence seems to really only be on one side of this, so you can see from the other side in. Would it be possible to add a condition that the fence be extended all the way around the area where there's parking and stuff being held or stored?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna have to interrupt for a minute. Our permanent record, the official record, is the video, and I was just informed that that has gone down. Oh, so we're going to be on hold for a few minutes or seconds.
I'll ask that question again later.
And you can do it again and do it again, and we'll be back up.
Okay.
we in recess then for a moment?
I'm hoping we won't need a recess, but if anybody would like a recess, we could make it a 5-minute recess. We will be in recess for 5 minutes. I am told that we are now back in operation. So you had a question? You want to restate your question?
Should I restate both questions or just the most recent?
Well, just to be safe, why don't you
do both? Okay, so my first question was with the concern about the storage of fluids from the mechanical equipment, if there was any concern about fluids that are currently being in use on the property, if there were hazardous materials.
Yes, that comment by the health department was a standard comment because you potentially have opportunities to store or work on equipment on unpaved or more pervious surfaces, and so it's just a standard condition.
Okay. And then my second question is, right now the fence, the screening fence that is on the property, it seems to be just one long fence on one side, and because there are people on all sides that are looking at this property, could we add it as a condition on here to have that screening fence put all the way around the area that's the construction yard, basically, the storage yard?
So from this vantage point, starting here at the end of the fence, to extend it upwards over and
correct
along this boundary, absolutely, it is well within the Planning Commission's purview to recommend okay. such a condition.
Okay.
Were there other questions, Ramir? Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several. The first is the applicant talked about beginning some of the activities at 6 in the morning, and I think the code says that construction can't begin before 7. Does the trucks coming in and out constitute construction, or does
no.
that not?
No, that's actual physical, vertical construction, okay. not business-related activities.
You talked earlier about the other accessory structures in the area, and you mentioned that some of the uses weren't in question today. I think actually they are, because I think we're here to talk about a use. Are there other businesses in the area? This is an RR5 zoned on almost all sides.
Right. There are properties, some of which were identified as having the additional large accessory structures.
Talking about commercial use.
That it
of
did.
Those
it did appear that there were potential commercial uses occurring on the property. Staff did not do a complete investigation regarding those uses, but again, it did appear that there were commercial activities occurring on many of those properties.
Okay. I have one question. I can't find the reference because I only had it in hard copy. But I'm also on the Board of Adjustment. We just dealt with an issue where an accessory structure was more than twice the size of the footprint of the residence. Is that the case here?
No.
Okay.
Actually, they came in about 20 or 30 square feet
Perfect.
Under the allowance.
No issue. Okay. The one, I've been struggling a little bit with compatibility. That's why I asked about the use issue. I don't see anything visually that concerns me that much. But the use and compatibility, and the one part that I'm having a real struggle with is in your staff report when you're talking about zoning compliance. And you mentioned that the contractor's equipment yard is not allowed in the RR5, and then you talk about the Falcon, you talk about the other zoning that would be applicable for this, which would include commercial services, I-2, industrial, those kinds of things. And the staff report says that the rezoning of the property to one of those would not be desirable because it would not be consistent with the Falcon area, lack of available water and wastewater, I'll quote it. Such rezoning of the property to one of those would be inconsistent with the recommendation of the Falcon Small Area Master Plan and would not be desirable due to the lack of available water and wastewater services necessary to support commercial service and industrial related uses. So there are two issues here. If it were rezoned to one of those where it would be an allowed use, it would be incompatible with the Falcon Small Area Plan, and there would not be sufficient water and wastewater. The availability and adequacy of water and wastewater is one of our consideration criteria that we may consider, not required to.
All right.
But if the water and wastewater would not be sufficient in one of those zones, and such zone would be inconsistent with the Falcon Small Area Plan, why is it that allowing it in an RR5 all of a sudden makes it consistent with that plan and makes the availability of water and wastewater okay?
Okay.
Struggling with that.
Very good question. Very good question. So the intent of that paragraph was not necessarily to focus on this particular use, but the additional bundle of uses that would be introduced as permitted and allowed uses under those zoning districts should this property be rezoned. And so while those may not be a consideration for this particular use, there are a bundle of other uses that would be introduced onto the property or could potentially be introduced onto the property that those considerations would be very, very primary and paramount. So part of the struggle is a contractor's equipment yard in and of itself is not an allowed use in the RR5. However, a rural home occupation as a special use would permit a contractor's equipment yard at this location in the RR5 zoning district. The distinction is the applicants don't qualify for that allowance because they don't reside on the property. And so it's almost a splitting of hairs. It comes down to qualifications. And so that's why staff sort of analysis really focused in on the compatibility and the visual impact rather than trying to argue, is this appropriate here or not? Because we had completed a review of the special use for the rural home occupation and got down to the point where we were ready to schedule it for a hearing, and going back through the re-reviewing the documents and rechecking the assessor's page, we said, wait a minute, there's an issue here. And so hopefully that answers more questions than it may raise.
So the bottom line is that the concern about the Falcon and Small Area Plan and the water and wastewater relative to the zoning of those other applicable ones is not related to this use. It's related to the other allowable uses on the zone.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Risley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the reason that we're here is that we're trying to legalize what is currently an illegal situation.
Yes.
What other remedies are available to the county at this point? I mean, obviously, a legal approach would be costly and difficult. The county could require that they cease and desist operations, right? What other solutions are out there, or is this the only option that we have before us?
I think there's two solutions. There's one, which is to recommend denial, and the board follow the recommendation of the Planning Commission and deny the application, at which point they would be given time to cease and desist. And if not, then as you mentioned, we would begin a legal process for injunction. The second alternative, which sort of has a bazillion different branches that it can go, is to recommend approval with conditions. And how the Planning Commission or the board ultimately wants to condition the approval will be determined by what you believe the primary issues are and how restrictive you want to be. I think we heard a potential for a condition that a specific area be completely enclosed with a 6-foot opaque privacy fence. We have options of constructing an additional building to contain additional materials and equipment. The board can restrict the area to a very narrow area on the property. The board can require any level of berming another screening to offset or mitigate potential noise impacts and the additional visual impacts. So again, it's determined by, I guess, what the Planning Commission and Board believe are the major issues and what they believe appropriate mitigation of those impacts and issues are.
So one of the things that I struggle with all of these potential remedies that you just described is that, in essence, what we're doing is that we're saying in order to legalize what is currently an illegal operation and to sort of bring it into compliance, we're recommending, in essence, expansion of the existing operation. And what I mean by that is building an additional building, building some more fencing, building perhaps some more parking area for a semi-trailer to be able to pull in off Falcon Highway. And so one of the comments from an adjoining property owner was a concern about expansion. And I may be kind of off base here, but this feels to me like in order to become compliant, we're recommending some expansion be a part of that. In doing so, I guess the other thing that I'm playing forward in my mind is that so now we've got multiple accessory structures that in total exceed the square footage of the primary structure, which I understand is allowed, but nonetheless is a fact. We've now got a large portion of this area that's paved, that's enclosed in an opaque fence, and knowing that this is a variance that doesn't run with the land but runs with the operation of the business, if the business ever discontinues operation on this property, who's the next buyer that's going to come in and buy a property that's got an acre of paving? And I don't know if that's how much there is, but it looks like a lot of paving that's got two or more large accessory structures. I just don't see that that's ever going to return to a residential use. And so I'm concerned with how all that plays out. Do you have any maybe insight or guidance for me?
I think regarding your use of the term expansion, and I follow your logic that your expansion in that context means additional improvements that are occurring on the site beyond what currently exists. And so using, I would rather classify that as simply improvements that are necessary to contain the use or that enhance the compatibility of the use or to mitigate some of the negative impacts of the use. But whatever the, 'cause there's really no expansion because the business is not legal. It's not a legal operation. And so whatever it is that the Planning Commission recommends and the board ultimately approves, that will determine the limits of operation and anything beyond that would be expansion. But again, you're right. Once you begin making these somewhat permanent improvements, it may limit the future market desirability for that property, and so it may attract a certain buyer, and so there is a possibility that the use could continue in perpetuity.
Yeah, it seems to me that if we were recommending the mitigation techniques would be berms and landscaping and perimeter screening that isn't, you know, an opaque fence and some other things that might be a little bit more in keeping with the residential character of the area, you know, that might be one approach. But to recommend that the way to mitigate it is with the construction of yet another large building and some opaque fencing and, as I said, perhaps some designated delivery area for a semi-trailer, that none of those things, in my mind, resonate as being compatible with residential use. So, thank you.
Any other questions? Yes?
Follow-up. I just want to piggyback on the alternative discussion. If they were to move in and live on the property, that would change the application to a special use, but they would still have to come before us, correct?
Correct, because there was a violation.
And we have similar but not the same considerations relative to.
Yes, very similar.
The other question I have is, when I mentioned earlier, I'm still concerned about the noise issue, and you talk about adding conditions. One that wouldn't change the physical character might be to add a condition relative to hours of operation that might make it more compatible with the neighbors. So I'm strongly considering that. I will be asked, of course, if I do that, how to word it. What is the ending hour of construction hours in the code? Do you know?
Well,
I know the beginning is at 7, but what's the ending?
For actual construction activities,
I
believe it's 7 to 7.
Okay.
And then in the I believe in the winter months, and then in the summer months, it can extend up to sunset. I don't have that reference. It's not something we reference frequently, but I believe that's close. I'll look back to some of my colleagues.
I'd be grateful if you could find that, because I'd like to word the, even though I'm quite well aware that what we're talking about doesn't constitute construction.
Right.
I still think that those hours would make some consistency relative to noise ordinance. So I'll be proposing a condition in that regard. Thank you. Okay. But it goes to the language, and I want to make sure we get it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have
Mr. Joy, yeah.
On the topic of them living on the property, and this might actually be a question for the applicant, have they ever lived on the property, or did they buy the property for the sake of setting this up?
Never lived on the property.
Okay.
Ms. Therese?
On the question of noise, what is generally the time of day where the semi-trailers would come through once a month, which I believe would be the most noise?
Always around noon.
If it's early in the morning, mid-morning?
No, it's always, it's between 10 a.m. and 2.
10 to 2, that's fine. Thank you.
I have a question. When was this zoned R5?
It's been R5 probably for 40 years or more, 50 years.
Okay. Since there's 35 acres involved here, was an A35 rezone considered?
No, because the allowance for the activity to be conducted in the A35 would be a rural home occupation as a standalone. Would not require a special use permit, but the applicants would be disqualified because they did not reside on the property. So a rezoning to an A35 would still have required a variance in order for them to conduct the business.
Okay. Because basically this business is really a warehouse.
With outdoor storage.
Well, if you're talking about having materials stored indoors.
Right.
And just delivery trucks or service trucks in the yard, isn't that an awful lot like a warehouse?
Absolutely.
Would a warehouse be permitted in A35?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
I do want to note there's a question regarding the speed limit on Falcon Highway. That speed limit is 45 miles an hour.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? At this time, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in opposition? Would the applicant like to add any additional comments? Okay. Would staff like to make any additional comments?
I do want to note that we do have day-night equivalent sound levels defined in the code. And it's consistent with the county's noise ordinance. And I would like to, maybe Nancy, if we can get the overhead, if we can maybe zoom in on this. And I'll just leave this here for reference. The noise ordinance allows up to 55 decibels between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. that allow for that noise level to be exceeded for no more than 15 minutes within an hour. And then it requires a maximum noise level of 50 decibels from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And so 7 to 7 is sort of the window if you want to make a condition that restricts activities on the site between those hours. We'll be glad to help craft a condition. If you want to do so, maybe we should take a break to help work on that. That way we're not fumbling through it on the record.
Yes, Mr. Curry.
It may actually be moot, so if I could just ask the attorney and the staff, since this resolution that he's referencing is County Resolution 02-1, and it's the noise ordinance, and it has several definitions in it. It's ordinance number 02-1 for the record. Is it then redundant to put in such a condition? I mean, they would still have to comply with this, even with this variance. Is that correct?
I think so.
I believe so, sir. You'd still have to comply with the noise ordinance regardless.
In that case, I don't think I need to complicate the issue further. I won't introduce such a condition. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Ramirez, more comments?
Yes. If it satisfies you, we could add it as a notation that simply notes the presence of the noise ordinance and makes a note on the approval that they are required to comply with that, but it's not a condition of approval, because what that would do is it would make this department the enforcer of that rather than the sheriff's department, who currently enforces the noise ordinance.
Okay. We have gone quite a little ways without a break. Let's take a 10-minute break. Anybody who has any conditions they want to add, you have an opportunity to draft those.
I do have a question for
yes,
for the attorney. If you
did, you have a question for the attorney?
Yes.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay,
Mr. Joya.
My question comes from our approval criteria here, and it talks about how the approval is based on whether it would present an exceptional practical difficulty or undue hardship for the applicant if it was decline. There are a couple of adjectives there that I wonder if you have any guidance for us on that. Exceptional, what makes a practical difficulty exceptional? What makes a hardship undue? Do you have any guidance for us on that? Because I definitely see some difficulties and hardship for them if this is declined, but I don't know if it rises to that level of exceptional or undue.
Certainly. I think some of the fact that this is a zoning matter, the issue of whether or not to grant a variance, there is a large amount of discretion as far as what the Planning Commission recommends on that. And I think that discretion actually works its way into what is an exceptional hardship versus a standard hardship for somebody that owns property in this kind of an area. As far as some additional guidance is concerned, again, the practical difficulties are undue hardship. A few questions that the Planning Commission may ask itself. One would be, why should the applicant be allowed this use that isn't otherwise allowed in the zone? Another is, should the applicant be allowed this use when no one else is allowed this use in this zone? and what injustice does the applicant suffer from current zoning, and how does the variance thereby render justice for that matter? And again, it really does cut back to that large amount of discretion that the Planning Commission has.
Is that its answer? Any other questions? Then we will be in recess for 10 minutes.
Just to get everyone's attention.
Who? If it works, it's fine. Planning Commission is back in session. Did you have any, want to make any comments in closing, any rebuttal comments? Okay, thank you very much. Ramir, did you have any other comments to make?
I just wanted to introduce a proposed notation to accompany any approval of the project, something to the effect of all commercial activities are subject to the El Paso County Noise Ordinance 02-1. And that just places the current owners or any future owners on notice that they are subject to the noise ordinance. I do want to make a clarification after a discussion with staff, and I think this goes to one of Mr. Risley's questions and concerns regarding the residential use of the property. Both the definition and the purpose of the rural residential zoning district in the Land Development Code do not restrict uses to just residential uses. There are uses that are permitted in that zoning district, which are not necessarily residential in nature, but may require a special use or an additional level of review. One example, I don't want to get into a list because we didn't have time to go through. For example, a wholesale nursery is a permitted use in the RR5 zoning district, and that may include the use of similar equipment and outdoor storage of chemicals or other supplies or another accessory structures that are related to that use. An example or a popular example of a use that would require a special use could be a kennel in that zoning district that may require a special use, or a campground or an outdoor amusement center as a special use if it met the acreage requirements, which this would meet. So potentially you could have a go-kart track or a dirt bike track or something of that nature on the property. So it's not exclusively residential, but it is intended to be primarily residential. And I think what you were getting at is once we make that transition from it being completely residential to something else, that something else may be permanent in nature. But I did want to make that clarification. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Risley.
Could I just ask a follow-on question to that? With those examples that you just gave us, would the owner of the property have to reside on the property for those to be applicable?
No.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm not working under the assumption that staff is recommending 7 conditions and 5 notations instead of 4 notations. Is that a fair statement?
Repeat that.
Right,
we're recommending
now
5
to have 5 notations
instead
rather
of 4.
Than 4.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I think we're probably ready for a motion. Ms. Therese?
I would move approval of the variance of use as presented.
So we have a motion for item 3, VA 17004, variance of use with 7 conditions and 5 notations with approval of page 51. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? If not, I will call for the vote. Mr. Joy?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the recommendation is in the affirmative, and hopefully the Board of County Commissioners will agree with us. Thank you. We are on item 4.
Good morning, Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development.
It took us so long, you wanted to check the clock to see if it was still morning?
I did. I wasn't sure. The request is for the Carriage Meadow South filing number 1 final plat. The file number is SF17011, and I would like to remind the Planning Commission that a finding for water sufficiency was made with the preliminary plan and PUD combined previously. There are 2 sets of criteria for approval for this request, and I believe the County Attorney's Office is going to review them.
Thank you, ma'am. Kenny Hodges, Senior Assistant County Attorney. There is actually a replat portion of this matter, which involves Lot 1, Brownsville Subdivision, number 2, and then the final plat criteria. I'm going to go over the replat criteria first. As a quick side note, this is a subdivision matter, meaning that there's less discretion on the part of the Planning Commission. Essentially, if the requirements are met, the subdivision should be approved. So for the replat, factors to consider for approval are that the replat complies with the code and conditions of approval as existing. No non-conforming lots are created, and to the extent that there are any non-conforming lots, that the non-conformity is not increased. The replat is in keeping with the intent of the Land Development Code. Replat conforms to the required findings for a major subdivision, for a minor subdivision. Legal and physical access is provided. Approval will not adversely affect public health, safety, or welfare. And there's no conflict with any covenants, or if there were any, that they've been resolved. Now, as far as the final plat criteria are concerned, the subdivision conforms with the master plan and preliminary plan. Subdivision meets design standards, regulations, planning, surveying, and engineering requirements. Sufficient water supply has been acquired. A sewage system has been established. The subdivision is compatible with any identified soil and topographical hazards. Adequate drainage improvements have been acquired. The subdivision has police and fire protection, recreation, utilities, transportation services. Fire protection methods comply with Chapter 6 of the Land Development Code. Off-site improvements mitigate subdivision impacts per Chapter 8 of the Land Development Code. Adequate public facilities and infrastructure or cash in lieu for impacts of the subdivision are being constructed or financially guaranteed. Subdivision meets all other Land Development Code Chapter 6 and 8 requirements, and commercial mining of known mineral deposits is not impeded by the subdivision. Can I answer any questions?
Any questions for our legal representation?
Not right now.
You did a good job.
Thank you, sir.
45 property owners were notified for the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioner hearing, which will be next Tuesday. There was three responses returned to Planning and Community Development. You have copies of them. It is also my understanding that there is a gentleman in the audience today that is curious about the proposal. The neighbors, the three neighbors do reside on the Phantom Way, which is across the Jimmy Camp Creek channel. And the neighbors cited concerns relative to premium lot fees to be adjacent to open space and a lack of commercial development on the site. The owners of Lorson Ranch LLC and Lorson Ranch LLC nominee, which includes multiple owners within that. The owner's representative, Jeff Mark, is here today, and he will be presenting this project to you.
I'm Jeff Mark with the Landhouse Company. The entities referenced are entities controlled by our parent company. I don't really have a whole lot to say. I think most of you are probably fairly familiarized with some of the discussion we've had in the past. I can probably move over here and give you a little bit of a history of the project, but all of our approvals have really been in place since 2005, of which this conforms to. I don't know exactly what the gentleman behind me has to say, but I think I could probably address a couple of those, and if I need to get back up and address some of his comments or questions later, I'd be happy to do that. We have a Jimmy Camp Creek. It's a very wide channel. It ranges from 100 to 200 feet in width from the nearest homes to the east, and so there's a significant buffer there. As far as lot premiums, I can't really speak to that. That's between the resident and the home builder. So I have no idea what those particular lot premiums were, but generally speaking, when you abut open space or, again, a more premium type lot because you have that significant buffer, it's likely that the builder charged those particular homeowners along the channel a lot premium. So again, I can't really speak to the particulars behind that, but I'm certain that that would be the case. As far as commercial, we have had a lot of discussions with a lot of different commercial users. We have about 1,400 homes to date, and it's rapidly growing at about 200 homes per year in today's market. So we hope that we get a gas station, a convenience store, some of the local neighborhood type uses here in the next year to 2 years. We're in discussions with some of those folks. They look at, of course, traffic patterns and other demographics, and to date they have not been interested because of our particular location. They'd rather pay to be on a commercial lot down on Mesa Ridge Parkway closer to I-25. So those are the feedbacks that we've had from certain commercial users. And one of our game plans is if something doesn't happen here in the near future, we might just go ahead and ramp something up on our own and develop a strip center of some sort, and hopefully we can get some of those types of users in there. So as far as commercial, it's what the market will bear. We would like commercial as much as anybody, and we believe the residents deserve that. However, that has nothing to do with this particular subdivision. So with that, I'm just here to answer questions if you have any.
Just a general one. We have four commissioners sitting here today that I think this is their first exposure to Lorson Ranch.
Sure.
So, because I know when I came on the board, the commission 4.5 years ago, there was discussion of Lorson Ranch. So if you could just give us a thumbnail overview of the development, that would probably be helpful.
Sure. As mentioned, we gained the majority of our major approvals as far as sketch plan and zoning back in the 2005 time frame. Since then,
again, as mentioned, we've built about 1,400 lots, of which 1,400 homes have been built upon. The channel, in, as part of our discussion, the main tributaries here, we did millions of dollars worth of work to take certain portions of the property, abutting that out of the floodplain through a Clomar and Lomar process. We also built a bridge right here. I presume you can see this map, correct? There's a bridge here, four-lane bridge. We'll also be building, what's important about this subdivision is this line here is generally the path of what's future Lorson Boulevard, which is in construction today. We will then build a similar bridge over the main channel here. And then in the near future, meaning I hope to start construction in the next 3 months on a bridge here, which is our east tributary, a smaller channel, as well as a bridge down in this vicinity. So we've got three bridges coming online in the near future. Ultimately, based on our development agreements, we can build another 300 homes effectively to the east of the main channel. But to build over here, we need these two bridges as of today. So those are in, we've vetted some of that, or most of that, through county review. Now that's into FEMA for review, and then once we get that approval, we'll start that process. We had a school site that we gave to the county here once upon a time. The school district reneged on their desire to have that 10-acre property, and so we've now, in our last sketch plan amendment, given the school 25 acres out in this vicinity. They're up for a bond in November, and so we hope that they achieve that bond through the vote of the people within the Widefield School District 3 boundary. If they get that, it's a substantial amount of money that will allow for the build-out of a K through 8 school, and I believe that they have the capability with that 25 acres to expand to something even larger. So again, we talked about commercial, but the school is also something that the residents deserve because they've been promised that since about 400 homes. So hopefully that'll happen. The improvements, as I discussed, the two bridges and the build out of Fontaine Boulevard, which ends right here, we'll build that out here in the next several months with this first bridge, and that'll provide the access to that school site. Other than that, we have a few different parks and different trail amenities throughout the subdivision. The primary commercial, of course, as you would probably expect, is up front here at the intersection of Mark Shuffle and Fontaine Boulevard. To date, we have multiple builders. As I also mentioned, we're building about 200 lots per year. This particular phase is 234 lots with the one replatted lot. And I would also mention that that lot being replatted has existed for quite some time through the Brownsville subdivision. And we own that lot, and so we're effectively making that a smaller lot. And anyway, we own that particular lot that's being impacted. Any further questions?
Thank you very much. Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one. We first talked last time, and this is the benefit of some of the other newer commissioners. I had and continue to have concerns with the reduction in some of the roadways. Can you talk about the roadway standards that you're putting inside? Then also talk about any landscaping reduction. You've moved from various linear foot planting of trees. Does that apply to this application?
Well, it applies so far as we have an approval in our PUD and pre-one plan to scale back some of the landscaping. The thought process behind that is water's expensive in today's world, and so we're trying to be more mindful of the cost, which really are the burden of our homeowners through the Metropolitan District and the operational mill levy. There's a 10 mil tax to the homeowners in Lorson Ranch. So most of that goes towards maintenance of the common areas and water bills. So we're trying to be more mindful, ultimately, of the water bills And so that was the rationale behind our asking for that reduction in the landscape. It still will look pretty nice. It's not going to look cheap. It's going to still look aesthetically pleasing. As far as roadways, I don't know if I fully understand the question. We've not really downsized anything. Over time, certain roadways have changed to an extent based on overall traffic volume. So every time we come in, whether it's a big picture outlook, meaning our sketch plan, when we did that amendment, we did a full traffic analysis that was vetted through and reviewed by county staff. And that set the stage for what all of our future road networks are going to look like. In addition, for every plat or PUD we come in with, and this is the perfect example, the latest subdivision of this 234 lots, we also have to do traffic analysis so that the county can confirm that the road networks and the roads that we're building are sufficient to handle the traffic, whether it be current or future. Does that answer your question?
Generally, yeah. I mean, it goes with the PUD now. I mean, it's already been approved. It was, some of it was relative to moving roads to different widths on the interior sections. Let me switch to my last question, and it relates to the metropolitan districts and the I understand you're also applying to be included in a public improvement district. And what would that cover, and what would be the impact if that didn't happen?
Well, the public improvement district is a county transportation impact fee program. And so the typical process, you have, as a developer, you have two ways you can approach it. You could either use credits to pay the whole fee, which is a pretty impactful and onerous fee when you plat. So at the plat recordation, you either have to pay the fee, or you join the PID, which puts the mill levy on all of the homes within the boundary of that PID. And so all of that money, however it might get paid, whether it be through a 30-year bond, as one example, in the PID, or it's paid all up front by either the developer or the builder, it all goes into the kitty for the Transportation Impact Fee Program to pay for either road improvements within the county or to reimburse developers for improvements that have been made that are part of the overall program. So that they're either eligible for reimbursement and they can be reimbursed, or the county can use those funds for other improvements that they deem necessary at a future date.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, this is an overall aerial of a map for the commissioners that may be new to the Lorson Ranch development. This was the old golf course that closed down, and this is the Peaceful Valley Estates area. To the southwest over here, this is the Glenet Widefield. A little bit more information on the background. The Lorson Ranch Jimmy Camp Creek sketch plan was approved in 2004. There was a following overall PUD, which did include a very broad phasing plan that was approved in December of 2005. That overall phasing plan was amended the following year in November of 2006. Basically, the overall PUD plan addressed general land uses, general buffers. It addresses transitions, but it's very bubble-like. Lot lines are not shown on an overall PUD. In fact, we removed the concept PUD from our land development code, I believe, in 2015. A minor sketch plan amendment was completed in 2016, and that minor sketch plan amendment, I believe, is what Mr. Curry is referring to in terms of downgrading the size of Fontaine Boulevard from 130 feet right-of-way, which is west of the east portion of the Jimmy Camp Creek Channel. So I'm going to back up so this is very clear to everyone. So the main Jimmy Camp Creek Channel and the eastern trib of the Jimmy Camp Creek Channel, Fontaine Boulevard here, and then basically at this point, it starts to decrease the width here, and I believe that's what you were referring to. Okay, so, and additionally, with that sketch plan amendment, it did kind of correct some of the land use that had already developed in terms of solidifying the actual densities that were out there, but in no way did we increase the overall density throughout the sketch plan, nor did we remove any of the original buffers or agreements that Lorison would put traffic to the south through the Peaceful Valley Estates. All of those original conditions remain intact with the sketch plan approval. After the sketch plan approval, there was a combined PUD development plan and preliminary plan, which was approved earlier this year in March. And, of course, this is the final plat to that. So here's an overall, the concept plan here, and we are down in this area where it used to be commercial and multifamily in here and high-density residential. So when we did that sketch plan amendment, we basically switched some of these land uses here, downgraded this road, removed the elementary school from here, the junior high school from here, and we put the 25-acre school site here. And we also removed another elementary school from here and relocated up here. Any questions on that sketch plan change? No? Okay. And there is the finished product for that 2016. I apologize for the small font on this. The approved PUD and preliminary plan, which you came before you in March earlier this year, as you can see, the final plat is consistent with the approved PUD and preliminary plan. In terms of the analysis, staff again did find the final plat complied with the approved PUD preliminary plan and the submittal requirements and approval criteria listed in the Land Development Code. And I think Elizabeth's going to come on up and talk about the engineering criteria.
Good morning. Elizabeth Nykamp, Engineering for Planning and Community Development. This site is located, obviously, within the Jimmy Camp Creek drainage basin. It is currently a fee basin. The site generally drains to the south and to the east into Jimmy Camp Creek. There'll be multiple private full-spectrum detention facilities, and by definition, that means water quality as well. They'll be constructed only for the southerly two-thirds of the site. So if we go back to the drawing here, this northerly one-third of the site is tracted out at this time and not to be developed When it does come in for development, they'll have to come in and provide for that at that time, water quality and detention if it's not already in the southerly ponds. The southerly ponds did account for a small amount of that. So there'll be multiple full-spectrum detention facilities. And my apologies, the next bullet has changed. The information in that bullet has changed since we made this slide. There is numerous public infrastructure that will be owned and maintained by the county with this development. However, the section of Jimmy Camp Creek adjacent to the site will remain the ownership and maintenance of a district that it currently is maintaining that structure. That whole entire area of Jimmy Camp Creek from the northerlymost border of Lorison Ranch was to the southerly border of Lorison Ranch was developed and approved by the county to be improved back about 11 years ago and or 12 now. I believe it was September of 2005 those construction drawings were approved. So the Lorison development went ahead prior to us imposing that requirement because you don't usually have to develop until you start to put you don't have to improve until you start to put developed flow into a creek. In this case, my records indicate that they did that work 10, 12 years ago. They've been maintaining it ever since. We've had some discussions with them. At first, we thought the county was going to own and maintain that section, but as of yesterday, Mr. Mark has agreed to leave it where it is with ownership and maintenance of the district. For traffic, this site will be accessed from Lorison Ranch Boulevard
and then onto Mark Shuffle Road, and also through Carriage Meadow Drive via Fontaine Boulevard. Carriage Meadows Drive is a road that is proposed at this time. We do anticipate about 5 miles of public roadway infrastructure to be owned and maintained by the county. The internal roads are also to be built by the county standards, and they'll be dedicated at the time of the final plat. And like I said, about a total of 5 lane miles, my apologies, 5 lane miles of roadway. And if you have any other questions, I think that's, yeah, that's my last slide.
Any questions for Ms. Nykamp? Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Over.
I have nothing further, but I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Hearing none, we will open this hearing to, are there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this project? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in opposition?
Or I don't know if it's in opposition.
Very good. Come forward. Have you had a chance to sign in?
No, sir.
If you would sign in and then speak your name into the microphone for the record.
My name is Jesus Trejo, and I own a home right there on Phantom Way. When we bought the house, we did pay a premium fee of $9,000 for that house because it backed up against the creek right there. And I'm not under the delusion that these houses will not be built back there on, across the creek. But what I'm concerned about is what constitutes a premium lot. What my understanding was when I bought the house is that there was nothing going to be built back there. We were going to have the mountain views, and I was more than happy to pay that $9,000 for that lot, the extra for that lot. So if now that houses are being built back there, they're going to be built back there, I assume. What constitutes that premium lot? Is it just because it's backed up against the creek? If that's the case, then I assume that that's what I paid for. If it was intended that that premium lot was because I had nothing beyond, even beyond that creek going to be built all the way up to Mark Shuffle Road, and that I was going to be afforded that mountain view as long as I own the home, what compensation am I going to get? $9,000 over 30-year mortgage with interest, it's a lot of money to me. That's my concern. I don't know if I am in, am I presented to the correct forum, if Lorson Ranch is responsible, or if the builder's responsible, I don't know. Those are my questions right now.
Do we have a large view that we can put up so that this gentleman can identify for us where his house is with respect to everything? That would, I think, be helpful to the commission.
I was trying to zoom in on it. I can't really zoom in, but sir, this is the creek, and so this road here, which is very small, I apologize.
Yeah, that's Phantom Way.
That would be Phantom Way. You want to, I think, show them, if you can, with the mouse, where you're...
My house is kind of right here. It's hard to tell. It's one of these houses right,
okay,
right there. Phantom Way has another street. I forget what it's called.
That's all right.
But yes, sir. You could see where my house is. Like I said, is right around here, and this again is the creek, and I was just, like I said, I was just curious on what constitutes the premium lot.
Are you higher or lower in elevation to the property that's being developed?
So if you're looking across the creek, there's like a berm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best you can estimate is that it's pretty much the same level. So what I will see beyond that berm is probably second stories and rooftops that will take up some of that view. You know, the mountains are huge. You're not going to block all the mountains at that distance. But, like I said, I was told that nothing would be built back there, that I was going to be afforded that view indefinitely.
One of the things that I have learned serving on this commission is that you don't own a view.
Yes, sir.
Because that view is over a property that's owned by other people.
Sure.
And so those people need to build based upon the standards that's been set, in this case by the county. And as long as they build to those standards, to the extent that your view is diminished, that is their right because that is their property.
Completely understandable.
And yes, so that's sometimes a surprise to people. You know, they'll build a house, it's next to this nice open field. The only thing they didn't understand was that open field was not a park. It was really owned by somebody who was going to develop it.
Okay.
So,
but at the same time, sir, what constitutes a premium lot?
That's something
It may not be the view, but is it because it's backed up against that creek that I don't have a neighbor right behind me? I don't understand.
Mr. Mark suggested, that's an issue that you need to take up with your realtor or the builder that sold you the property.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. Thank you for coming. Appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Any rebuttal or further comments?
No, I would let the gentleman know that in the future when the applicant applies for the PUD for the northern portion of that, so for a picture for him. So, sir, when the applicant comes in to develop this portion, he will have to submit a planned unit development plan. And in that PUD, that's when he will propose the dimensional standards for the new development. He's proposing height and massing of the buildings. So at that time is when you may want to get involved with Jeff Mark and his team so that your concerns may be mitigated. Uh-huh.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the commission? Floor is open for a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gioia.
As regards agenda item number 4, SF-17-011, Carriage Meadows South filing number 1, final plat, I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page 19, with 11 conditions, 2 notations, and a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second for Ms. Therese. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for vote. This is item 4, SF-17-011, a final plat, Carriage Meadows South, filing number 1 with 11 conditions, 2 notations. It is a motion for approval based upon page 19, and that water sufficiency is sufficient in quality, sufficient in quantity, sufficient in dependability. And with that, Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. This motion is approved unanimously. And with that, unless Mr. Dossie has anything, we will be adjourned.
Just want to let you all know, we do anticipate having a October 3rd Planning Commission hearing. I believe there's at least one special district application for the service plan on that agenda, maybe two. So that will, for the new folks that are on the Planning Commission, that'll be a whole nother education in some of the things that the Planning Commission sees. So we can look forward to that. Thank you all.
Thank you. We're adjourned. Thank you all. And we're out before lunch.